I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Chris Matthew. He is the Chief Growth Officer at Well Genie. They're a company that transforms the way employers support their teams through innovative and non-insurance wellness benefits. He has a passion for scaling high-impact services and a track record in growth strategy. And, you know, as a broader level, for those that have been listening to the podcast, you know that we've had a number of people on that are doing new and different things in the healthcare space. And if you're a business owner, your healthcare expenses are going up significantly. As a matter of fact, it's probably the number two or at least the number three line item in your budget. And it's going up probably faster than your revenue. And so this is something to tune in because it will make a difference to your business. Chris, welcome.
Howdy, Craig. Thanks for having me.
That's funny. You say howdy. And so for those that are listening on radio, I'm looking at an Indian face and I'm hearing a very Texas greeting, a very A&M greeting in your maroon vest. But you're from Texas, but you're not from Texas.
Yeah. Well, I'm all of the above. I am a Malayali. My family is originally from Kerala, the very southern tip of India. But I'm born and raised in Texas. My brothers and I are first generation born here. I went to Texas A&M. Howdy's a big thing for us. And listen, my whole life, my boys, everywhere we go, we now live in Kentucky, actually. But even here, we say howdy. And my boys say howdy to people because what we found, Craig, is when you say howdy to people, they just... it's hard for them not to be able to say hi back or howdy back. And at least it is for us.
Why, you know, so it's like howdy is a unique greeting for anybody who graduated from A&M. And when I hear that, I think, oh, I'm probably talking to an A&M grad. Why do you think that's not used elsewhere in Texas?
I don't know. so much of Texas A&M is about tradition, which is a weird thing because that's kind of a common theme throughout a lot of my life. There's a lot of tradition. Howdy is just part of that Aggie land culture and the tradition there in Aggie land. But for me, it brings me joy to say howdy to people. And I go out of my way to say hi to people and hello to people because I appreciate when someone does that for me. And so I always try to do that for others. There's a lot of great traditions that come out of Texas A&M, but howdy's definitely one that I use on a daily basis, all the time.
Yeah. Now, Kerala is a fascinating part of India. And you know, for us Americans, you know, we see this big country and we're like, okay, there's a whole bunch of Indians there. We don't understand the difference between different parts of India. But the little bit that I've learned, Kerala is absolutely fascinating.
It is. It is fascinating. India is fascinating. You know, I don't know the exact number of how many different languages are spoken today. It's over 20 different languages. So it's one country, but it is a massive country as well. So Kerala is it's on the very southern tip, on the western tip. So the way kind of you think about India coming down to a point, on the western part of that point is the state of Kerala. And there are so many interesting facts. For example, Kerala is a democratically elected communist government.
Oh, that's weird.
Open elections all the time. Lots of parties run. The communist government works. And it works there because there really is this concept of taking care of each other, taking care of your neighbor, that is prevalent throughout the state of Kerala. Kerala also has... this is a remarkable number, an over 90% literacy rate throughout Kerala.
It's the highest in India.
It's the highest in India, which is wild when you like think about what would be, what would Texas be like? What would our country be like if we had a 90% literacy rate in our communities? It'd be remarkable. And so for the reason that happened, there's a lot of schools. Everyone is given free education. And because of that, a lot of those schools are from the church community. So the largest concentration of Christianity throughout all of India is in Kerala. Now, even in Kerala, Christianity is still the third most popular religion. It's still Hinduism, it's still Islam, and then Christianity. But the way that the missionaries from way back when came, they all set up schools. And all of the kids in Kerala get to go and have this great education. And so because of that, education is absolutely the key to be able to climb out and to rise above your previous situation. So everyone in Kerala gets this education. And because of that, there's a lot of tolerance for Christianity. And again, there's a coexistence of the Christian churches, the Eastern Orthodox churches, the Muslim temples, and the Hindu temples, that there's just this dance where it all works. You know, throughout the rest of India, you've got a very large Hindu population. It's hilarious when we go back to India, which we go back often, because again, the majority of my family is still there. My dad came here in 1971 to pursue the American dream, but he was the oldest of nine. All of his brothers and sisters remained back in Kerala. And so I have lots of first cousins, and same thing with my mom as well. When we go back, we see this great dance of all these different religions and languages that take place. But there's also a lot of tourism that comes to Kerala because it's a beautiful part of the country. But also because in Kerala, because Christianity is accepted there, a lot of people come to Kerala to be able to eat meat, because we eat meat, and to have a drink and to have a good time and to let loose a little bit, because lots of the other parts of the country don't necessarily indulge in that. So Kerala is it's a phenomenal place. I hope someday you get the chance to go. It's really beautiful.
Well, and from what I understand, the first Western boot print was on a beach in Kerala, as opposed to elsewhere in India.
Well, I've not heard that story, but yes, I that makes total sense to me. So, you know, the storyline, the narratives that I've heard my life growing up, when St. Thomas left Syria, the first place that he kind of came to spread Christianity was the very southern tip of Kerala. That brought lots of other travelers, lots of other folks that followed in those footsteps. So it would absolutely make sense to me that the first boot footprint could have been on a Kerala shore.
I think it was Vasco de Gama. I forgot the part after Gama, but yeah, that was something I read. And basically Columbus was looking for India and just didn't realize it was a whole nother ocean away.
That's right. Wrong Indians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. And so your dad moved to the U.S. when he was in 1971.
Yeah. So his uncle had come in 1970, and his uncle was the youngest of his family. And my actual grandfather was his eldest brother. My grandfather had helped all of his siblings try to rise up and find pathways to be able to pursue all the things that they wanted to. As a tribute to his oldest brother, my great uncle sponsored my dad to come to the U.S. in 1971. My dad had, as the oldest, kind of the way in India, if you're the oldest, you're going to inherit everything, right? And then it's your responsibility, Greg, as the oldest, it's your responsibility to then take care of the rest of the family.
Mm-hmm.
My great-grandfather was the oldest. My grandfather was the oldest. My dad was the oldest. I'm the oldest. And now my 11-year-old son is the oldest. So this generation is, you know, firstborn being boys. My grandfather helped his youngest family, his younger siblings, that great uncle sponsored my dad. My dad knew, if I leave India, I'm leaving the birthright of what I'm not going to inherit the family business, because I want to chase this American dream. And for him, that was a worthwhile endeavor. So my grandfather, my father's father, split up the family business to the rest of the brothers. My dad was given the opportunity to come to the U.S. and chase the American dream. And I'm here to tell you that I'm a product I'm, you know, by no means am I living the 1% of the US, but I'm living the 1% of the world, given just one generation ago. My parents are from what were back then villages. They're small communities and cities now. Maybe, I don't even know if we call them a city quite yet. But where I could have absolutely just been a kid growing up on a dirt road, kicking a soccer ball without shoes on, like I see back in Kerala all the time. And there's a lot of modernization that's happened in the last 40 years, but that could have very easily been my life. My parents came here, they chased the American dream, they sacrificed a lot to do that, leaving everything they've ever known. My brothers and I think about this, and I think about this a lot. Do I have the courage to give up everything that I know and move to the opposite side of the world to chase a possibility of a dream? I don't know if I have that kind of courage. I mean, I want to say that, you know, maybe it's inherent in us, but I have courage in some ways. You know, I'm an entrepreneur, and so that I'm a risk taker. My family, they were risk takers, and it worked out. My brothers and I, again, are all doing different things, but all have found great passion in what we're doing and have also found a way to earn a decent living and provide for our families and still take care of and support a lot of our family back home in India, which is the ultimate gift.
Wow. Wow. Well, what's your dad doing now?
My dad has actually passed.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. You didn't know. My father passed in February, will be 12 years. And in a way, his passing is part of the catalyst of why I do what I do now. Right? I have a lot of different startup experiences, but my father passed away when he should not have. My dad went to his primary care doctor that he had a relationship with for 25 years. He went in feeling really terrible, complaining of chest pain. Went in, saw his doctor, shared all that, and said, "Hey, can we do an EKG?" They did the EKG. They found a right bundle blockage, but the physician dismissed it. Said, "It's not a big deal. There's 20% of people are walking around with this. It's not that big of a deal." The problem, Craig, when an over 65-year-old diabetic whose father died of a heart attack comes in complaining of chest pain, and you do an EKG and you find a right bundle blockage, you send that patient to the hospital right away. Hindsight is what it is, but that's not what happened. My dad, he was dismissed, sent home. Came back a few days later, complaining, like, "I really feel terrible." They gave him some cough syrup with codeine to say this should help, but you'll be fine. He came back in for a third visit. This is 10 days now after the first time he'd come in, and says, I'm feeling terrible. They put a pulse oximeter on him, right? You know, the finger clip, and they could not identify his pulse. They still dismissed it and sent him home. To not identify someone's pulse is a shocking, it should be a shocking alarm. It should be able to be like, this is a red flag here. Something's going on. But they sent him home. That night, my wife and I are having dinner. I called my dad. He sent me to voicemail, but he sent me a text saying, "Hey, I'm too tired to talk. I feel really bad. I feel like I'm dying." And I wrote back, "You're not dying. I'm going to see you tomorrow." An hour later, my mom called and dad was gone. That has obviously rocked my world, rocked my whole family's world. The thing that I've taken away from it that I now use as fuel and energy in what I'm doing today with Well Genie is it all distills down to advocacy for people, especially in their health journey.
Yeah, and I can tell you personally, I mean, I think we've talked a little bit about my story. It's a miracle that I'm alive. I should be dead. And thankfully, my wife was in the hospital advocating for me. I mean, they missed blood transfusions and things like that. And the only reason I got those was she was there advocating.
Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful that your wife was able to do that for you.
Yeah,
I think advocacy is critically important, right? For my dad, they had a 25-year relationship. He wasn't going to question his doctor. Also, culturally, there's some things that are, you know, physicians are, and I'm pro-physician. I'm all about physicians being wildly successful in this ecosystem of healthcare. they were not going to challenge the physician. My mom wasn't going to challenge the physician. Truth be told, I didn't know about any of this that was taking place until after the fact. So it was hard to be able to know what to do, especially given the status of healthcare today. When you go see your doctor, or when most people go see their doctor, that doctor's looking at a screen, and it's not because they don't want to have a relationship with you, right? I look at primary care in particular. If you choose to be a primary care teacher, it's like a similar pathway of you choosing to be a firefighter or a teacher. That you're not doing it to make all the money in the world. You're doing it to make incredible impact for people. Mm-hmm. So that primary care physician, I believe she got into this to create relationship and connection with people. But the system around primary care and physicians and healthcare has been put into place with huge insurance companies and huge EHR companies and big complicated pharmacy companies that have put all this regulation where a physician is moving at this crazy rate. They barely have the opportunity to really connect with you because that primary care doctor, to make the dollars and cents make sense, they got to see 40 patients a day. I will never be convinced, Greg, that anyone can say that quality care is being rendered to 40 people a day. It's just, right. It's just too transactional, right? An advocate is a person that can be able to slow things down and help you navigate these things and ask right questions and be able to make sure that you're getting the second opinions and you're getting the clarity and understanding. And, you know, I wish I could have done that for my dad. I wish I could do that to take away that pain for my family. I can't. My pathway is now trying to do this so that other people don't have to go through the same thing.
So here's where I'm struggling a little bit. Help me get through this. So you mentioned that you take cost out of healthcare, and everything I'm hearing, it sounds like more services. When I think more services, I'm thinking more cost.
Yeah. Those seem like they're in total contradiction. And I get that. The reality is that's because we've all been conditioned by the big insurance carriers that everything has to be incredibly expensive. When the reality is there are smart ways to have direct contracts. There are smart ways to be able to increase services and dramatically lower costs. Here's a prime example. I was listening to a podcast yesterday. Dave Chase from the Health Rosetta organization. Health Rosetta is doing amazing things. He was interviewing a VP of HR for a manufacturing company called Pfeiffer in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. They've gone down this path, and manufacturing in particular doesn't always have necessarily the best risk of employee population. So normally manufacturers can just expect their premiums to go up every single year like always. This organization put together these types of strategies and tools, that some of which we have here at Welgene. And for 5 years, they had flat renewals. And then this next year, they're having a 7% decrease.
So flat meaning the price didn't go up.
The price did not go up. It stayed flat, but they offered more services. And not only did they offer more services, now again, this next year, they're expecting a 7% decrease in their health plan spend. But here's the most amazing part. This VP of HR talked about how they now offer scholarships to the employees' children to go to college. They offer childcare for the employees who have young children that need childcare services. They were able to implement multiple million-dollar machine upgrades to their organization. And they're providing all of this because they put their hand on the wheel and said, we are going to help steer and control the cost of our healthcare. Because they've done that, they've essentially lowered their healthcare spend by nearly 40 to 50%. That is creating this ecosystem for that manufacturer to be an employer of choice. But what I love even more about this gentleman and this Health Rosetta mindset is it doesn't have to just be limited to one employer and one group of employees. What if we built a whole community like this? What if we created a community-owned health plan? What if we had lots of businesses like this? In my opinion, this is economic development 3.0. If we can put really smart healthcare solutions in place, then all of the employers can say, we want to recruit the very best and the brightest talent out there. And one of the ways you do that to recruit and retain is offer an incredible benefit package. But if your incredible benefit package offers great healthcare solutions and you can add these incredible things like college tuition for your employees and their young students, childcare additional services to be able to make life richer for your employees, you're going to not only retain these people, but you're going to create a line of people that want to come work for you and become that employer of choice, which is absolutely the goal.
So what does, no, and that makes so much sense. That makes incredible sense. And the, you know, it's, I think to everybody, it's clear healthcare costs are just going up astronomically. And, you know, and for businesses, you know, the numbers I hear, most businesses are seeing 20, 25% year-on-year increases on their health costs. And unless their profit dollars are growing more than that, more than 20, 25% a year, they've got a problem. What are you guys doing? What does Walgenie do? What's an engagement?
The I want to comment on one thing. The Kaiser Family Foundation just put out a survey, maybe in last month or first thing this month, just in the last 6 weeks. And part of what they highlighted was that family premiums for family health insurance have gone up 365% in the last 25 years.
Yeah.
And so that's also with employers taking some of that cost as well. So it's not that the employers are giving all of that increased cost to the family. The employers have been taking some of that burden, but then shifting a lot of that. For a family to have a 365, today I think the number's around, a family can expect about $26,000 a year that they're going to spend on health insurance premiums. Craig, that doesn't mean that they're even using the insurance.
Right.
Because you still got to hit your deductible. And then when you do hit your deductible, you still got to pay the 20% coinsurance. So then all of a sudden it's like, you know what? People delay care. I don't feel great, but I feel fine. I feel good enough because I don't have $8,000 or $6,000 or $10,000 for that family high deductible health plan. I can't hit that, right? So I'm paying this $26,000 for insurance on the off chance that I get hit by a truck. And I got something that'll cover me if I end up in a really bad situation. So what all that screams to me is that this is unsustainable and it is robbing people of the chance for their own American dream. And that is what we're trying to be able to combat.
What do y'all do? What does Walgenie do?
So there's, we are, and you mentioned this earlier, we're a non-traditional wellness platform. We're not traditional insurance. Nothing that Walgenie does hits a traditional insurance health plan. So a company pays premiums and the insurance company pays the claims. If the claims are higher than the premiums, they're going to come back and say, so sorry, Craig, I got to give you a 25% increase. Well, what if we can actively remove spend from those health plan claims? Then the employer is in that position to say, I want to negotiate premium reductions for the employer, but also for the family. So the way that we do that is across five areas. And our program covers an employee and four household members. So five people are covered for the five things that we do. The first thing we do is we offer unlimited generic medications for $0. You go to any local pharmacy, you show the Walgenie card, you pick up your acute medication, you pay $0. If you're taking a chronic care medication, we're going to mail that chronic medication directly to you, a 90-day supply. And again, you're going to pay $0 for it. Our formulary, it's not all generic medications, but it represents 93% of the most prescribed generics. So while it's not all, it's more than just a majority. And again, all of that, $0. The second thing we do is we offer brand medications for 30 to 60% off what the traditional standard rates are that are happening across the country. The way we do that is we source with one of the three largest pharmacy wholesalers here in the US, and we also have the opportunity for personal importation from a brick and mortar pharmacy in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. So we're not sourcing from India or China or Turkey or Israel or anywhere else, right? It's coming from just our friends north of the border. If that employer is open to that, if they're not, then we source just directly in the US. But again, the quick example I'll give you, there's one particular state that an employer that has 70,000 employees. We did a data analysis on their brand medication spend, and this is remarkable, Greg. On just 12 medications, we're going to help this employer recapture $39 million annually And we're going to return $9 million annually back to those employees who are taking those 12 medications because we wipe out their copay.
Wow.
That's the amount of markup that is in this industry right now that we can neutralize those things and help that employer reinvest those funds back into their core agenda of growing their business and taking care of their people.
Now, is some of that, like, there was a drug, I'm not going to say the name on the podcast, but it deals with, skin issues. And the one that was the prevailing drug went off patent, so they just made a twist to the formula, and they rolled out the new one. Are you getting people off the new one onto the one that just rolled off?
No, sir. So are the medications, the 12 brand medications that we're going to deliver for this employer, it's the exact medications. It's from the same manufacturer. It's the same box. It's the same dosage. It's not a biosimilar. It's not a compounded version of the drug. It is the brand medication, just not delivered 1,000% markup of what traditional PBMs and the current status quo allows drugs to get created.
And you just used some lingo, PBM.
Pharmacy benefit managers, which act as a third-party intermediary. They're supposed to be looking out, making sure that a pharmacy can obtain a certain medication from a drug manufacturer at a reasonable rate. The ugly truth is that there's so much markup. I can offer you a 20% discount, and that sounds great, but not when I've marked up the initial drug 10,000%. So a 20% discount sounds great, but what was the original cost? And that's the kind of stuff that's being hidden and masked throughout this industry. This is why health insurance on the premium, on the carrier side, but also on the pharmacy side, is a runaway train right now.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I've learned as I've interviewed you and others on the podcast is one of the things that's driven up the cost was the medical loss ratio, which basically says, and I know there's two different numbers. Let's just deal with the 80% number. Basically, 80% of premiums have to go to claims.
Correct.
And so the healthcare execs, you know, the insurance execs, they want to get pay raises. So the only way for them to get a pay raise is to jack up the claims, you know, pay out more in claims. But my understanding is that there's some of the pharmacy benefit managers that are in kind of cahoots, you know, maybe even owned by, I think there's one that actually owns one of the major, you know, was Buca's, you know, one of the major insurers. And so there's no limitation. There's no medical loss ratio on the pharmacy benefit managers. They just run the profits through that.
That's right. So it's not just one, Greg. All the Bucas own a PBM. They have this, what they call vertical integration. What I refer to, and this may seem too extreme, but it's more like a cartel. They're completely undermining what the principles of this were all set up for, was to increase access to care and make it easier for people to go pursue healthcare and prevent little things from becoming big things. But this thing has been a runaway train. The medical loss ratio, they're only allowed to make 15 to 20% profit. Well, if you're only allowed to make 15 to 20% profit, let's just say on $1 million, and I want to make more than just 20% on $1 million, well, then I need to make the pie bigger. I need to make it $10 million. Well, okay, great. We were successful. How do we make that $10 million 100 million? How do we make it now 4.5 trillion? Which is actually, the number is actually even higher than 4.5 trillion on what we spend in healthcare in the US, which is wild given the ranking of the outcomes that we have. But you're right. The unintended consequence of the medical loss ratio is that people have now allowed themselves to just blow up the cost of claims. And so this increasing premium increase for all of us makes no sense, but also none of us thought there's anything we can do about it. There are a lot of business owners and CEOs and CFOs that are like, what choice do I have? I can jump from one Buca to the next. I can leave Blue Cross and I can go to United. And then next year, I'm going to leave United and go to Cigna. And the year after, I'll just go to Anthem and Aetna. And you just keep doing this move because someone's going to say, hey, I got to give you a 25% increase. And then when they settle on a 14% increase, you think you won.
Yeah.
What you don't realize is who justified the 25% increase? Based on what? Based on the drug that you were taking that they were charging you $80,000 for that you could have purchased for $400. I know that seems insane and ridiculous, but the markup on some of these medications, I've seen an $80,000 drug for one dose that we can deliver for $3,600.
Yeah.
That's a massive difference, right? And all of those things, those little things add up to the big things. And what we're trying to do is, again, we're trying to prevent that financially, but also for the medical, for the human side of it, I want to prevent little things from becoming big things. I want someone to be able to go see a physician and get the appropriate care, get the right care at the right time in the right place and for the right price. That's the goal of what Well Genie is doing. There's three other solutions that we have, but when we bring all five of our solutions together, we're increasing access to care and we're removing the cost burden. We offer unlimited utilization across all five of our solutions. So there's not a cap on it. And also, I've removed the barrier of entry because there's no cost to the employee, yeah. Right? And so when you can remove those things, then you can make it easier for people to access care and not delay care. And when you delay care, that's when that little thing becomes the big thing. Because that high blood pressure pill that we could start taking right now could prevent 10 months from now, Chris having a massive heart attack and ending up in the hospital for 4 days, having surgery, not only the financial impact, but the emotional impact on Chris and his family and everything else that happens from that. So.
Well, Chris, this is really, I mean, this is fascinating. I love what you're doing. I've told other people like you that I believe you're building the life raft. The trajectory we're on is not sustainable. Medicare is going to be insolvent in 2032. And so we need to turn the curve around, and you're one of the people doing it, and you're doing it for businesses. How can people reach you?
Really easy, very easy. Chriswell-genie.com is my email. There is no conversation I'm not willing to engage in. My requirements are simply, are you curious? Is there a way to stop this runaway healthcare train? The expenses that are taking place. If you're curious, that's all I ever need.
Yeah.
Because then we can talk through it. If people have resolved, like, listen, the juice is not worth the squeeze. Like, I know I'm overpaying for my healthcare and charging my employees more, but that's not my problem. I'm not here for that population of people. There's only so much that we can do, right? If people are curious and are saying, this is no longer sustainable, I want to do more for my people, but also I expect more from my organization, I'm available. My email, I've been on LinkedIn for a long time. So I'm just linkedin.com/in/ just Chris Matthew. And as a Malayali from Kerala, my last name is spelled a little different. Matthew is only with one T and no S. So just on LinkedIn, just Chris Matthew, M-A-T-H-E-W. Between those two places, I'm try to be somewhat active on LinkedIn, but I live in my inbox a lot. And again, I love to show people that there is a way to be able to do more and pay less. And I think that it's a way to really, again, reinvigorate the American dream that I've been very blessed to experience firsthand.
Well, Chris, thanks for sharing your story on Leaders and Legacies.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate you.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show It means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.